VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Israel's Air Force carried out several strikes on the suburbs of Beirut Monday night following an Israeli army warning to evacuate the area. Israel said late Monday it planned to carry out more strikes in Lebanon against a Hezbollah-run financial institution it targeted the night before and which it says uses customers' deposits to finance attacks against Israel. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is again in the Middle East, making his 11th trip to the region since the Gaza War erupted last year and as Israel steps up attacks against Hezbollah in Lebanon. The State Department said Blinken departed Monday for a week-long trip to Israel and several Arab countries on a visit that also comes as Israel weighs retaliation against Iran for a ballistic missile attack earlier this month. The White House said Monday the Pentagon is investigating the unauthorized release of classified documents about Israel's military plans. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
A White House spokesman says the leak of top secret information is deeply concerning.
We're not exactly sure how these documents found their way into the public domain.
White House National Security spokesman John Kirby on the online posting of top secret documents about Israel's plans for Iran.
We're deeply concerned, and the president remains deeply concerned about any leakage of classified information into the public domain.
He says they don't know if the information was leaked to the Telegram messaging app or if there was a hack. The documents are attributed to the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency and the National Security Agency, pointing out that Israel was moving military assets for a strike against Iran. I'm Jackie Quinn.
This is VOA News. Moldovans have voted by a razor-thin majority in favor of securing the country's path toward European Union membership. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The weekend ballot nearly caused a major setback for the pro-Western president. Peter Stano, the EU Commission spokesman, says criminal groups trying to undermine the vote.
We noted that this vote took place under unprecedented interference and intimidation by Russia and its proxies, aiming to destabilize the democratic processes in the Republic of Moldova.
The yes vote stood at just over 50%, while the no's came in at 49.6. In the presidential race that was held at the same time, incumbent Maia Sandu won the first round with 42% of the vote in a field of 11, but failed to win an outright majority. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Thousands gathered Monday on the streets of Yaoundé, jockeying to catch a glimpse of Cameroon's long-absent leader. Rumors about the death of 91-year-old President Paul Biya swirled after he disappeared from public view for over a month following an official visit to China. Moki Edwin Kendezka has more from Yaoundé.
A warm welcome. Cameroon State Radio says President Paul Biya, a few of his close advisors and his wife Chantal Biya are back in Yaoundé after spending close to 50 days outside the Central African state. Biya's return was also broadcast live on state television, which showed thousands of people gathered at major junctions near Yaoundé Simalen International Airport where Biya landed. Civilians said there was a huge military presence in Cameroon's capital when Biya arrived. Supporters of the opposition Cameroonian Party for National Reconciliation, or CPNR, turned out to chant slogans telling Biya that he is old and should hand over power. Moki Edwin Kinzika, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The UN's Biodiversity Summit is opening in Colombia this week, with nearly 200 countries debating how they can save nature from the current rapid rate of destruction. Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino has more.
At COP15 2 years ago, countries agreed on more than two dozen global goals. The agreement was called the Kunming-Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework. It includes things like setting aside 30% of the earth for conservation and mobilizing $200 billion in nature financing.
Reuters correspondent Olivia Zolino. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Large crowds greet Cameroon's president as he returns after rumors of his death.
After the wild rumor that circulated, our people are happy to hear that President Paul Biya is coming back strong and that he's coming back to continue his duties in the country.
Mozambique police fired tear gas at protesters, injuring a journalist. Nigerian human rights groups and activists criticized brutality during an End SARS memorial observation. Displaced Zimbabwe farmers are skeptical about their government's decision to compensate them. Zambia's opposition criticizes the sacking of three constitutional court judges.
This president has fired more judges than any other president at any time in the last 60 years of our life as a country. We have condemned his decision to undermine the judiciary.
And Spain sees opportunity in the influx of African migrants, bucking the European Union trend. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenya's Directorate of Criminal Investigation has invited impeached Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua to appear at their headquarters today, Tuesday. He has been asked to formally record a statement for investigations into his claims of multiple assassination attempts on his life. In the invitation dated October 21st, 2024, the Bureau says the allegations cannot be taken lightly and promises to handle them seriously. A spokesperson declined our request for further clarification, except to say that the police extended an invitation to the former deputy president and not a summons. Thousands gathered on Monday on the streets of Yaoundé, fighting for a position to catch a glimpse of Cameroon's long-absent leader, Paul Biya. Rumors about the death of the 91-year-old president swirled after he disappeared from public view for over a month following an official visit to China. Moki Edwin Kinzika has more from Yaoundé.
Thank you very much and a warm welcome.
Cameroon State Radio says President Paul Biya, a few of his close advisors and his wife Chantal Biya are back in Yaoundé after spending close to 50 days outside the Central African state. Biya's return was also broadcast live on state television, which showed thousands of people gathered at major junctions near Yaoundé Simalen International Airport, where Biya landed. 35-year-old chemistry teacher Mbang Boniface was among the throngs of civilians, many of whom were anxious about his mysterious absence. He says he is surprised that the Cameroon government gave so much importance to Biya's return without telling civilians where the president was.
We just wake up one morning to see this huge mobilization of workers, students, to receive somebody we've not known where he was. And this not only slows down economic activity, but slows down productivity. The citizens are worried if the president who is coming in is in good health or not. It's a shame.
Hundreds of Biya's pictures with messages welcoming him back home were visible at several road junctions. Biya, who looked old but strong, spoke with his advisors at the airport for about 6 minutes before leaving for Cameroon's presidential palace in a motorcade heavily protected by forces of the presidential guard. Fru Jonathan is a member of Biya's ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement Party and a close collaborator of Biya. He called media reports that civilians were either hired or intimidated to turn out en masse to welcome Biya as unfounded.
After the wild rumors that circulated, our people are happy to hear that President Paul Biya is coming back strong and that he has been walking out there and that he's coming back to continue his duties in the country. Our wish is that President Paul Biya should continue to be healthy.
Supporters of the opposition Cameroonian Party for National Reconciliation, or CPNR, turned out to chant slogans telling Biya that he is old and should hand over power. The 92-year-old Biya has been Cameroon's president for more than four decades. He left the Central African States on September 4 for the Africa-China Forum. After departing China on September 8, he hadn't been seen in public for more than a month, triggering speculation in news reports and social media posts that he might have died. During that time, Cameroon's government said Biya was in excellent health and working for the country's development in Geneva. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Five people, including a journalist, were injured in the Mozambican capital on Monday when police fired tear gas towards independent presidential candidate Benicio Mondlane and his supporters, who had gathered to protest at the scene where two prominent opposition figures were shot dead by unidentified gunmen over the weekend. Charles Manguiro reports from Maputo.
As Mondlane addressed reporters Monday in the capital, Maputo, police stormed the area and fired tear gas in his direction. The opposition candidate was shielded by his aides and supporters, while journalists ran for cover as tear gas shells fell around them. Hospital officials said five people, including a journalist, were treated for tear gas exposure and discharged from Maputo Central Hospital. Mondlane, who contends the October 9 election was rigged, had gathered with supporters near the site where two opposition party figures were shot dead over the weekend. He had previously called for a nationwide shutdown and urged people to stay away from work on Monday to protest what he and other parties have called fraudulent elections. Final results in the election are expected later this week, but preliminary results show the ruling Frelimo Party presidential candidate, Daniel Chapo, has a comfortable lead. Police say there was also unrest Monday in various Maputo neighborhoods and in the southern province of Gaza as stone-throwing youth burned tires and barricaded roads. Police say six people were arrested. Maputo Province Police spokesperson Rodrigues Jabana told a media conference that forces dispersed groups of youth that gathered in the streets allegedly to plan violent protests. We had another situation also in Matola City in which a group of national citizens were in one of the streets and the police took control of the area. Despite seeing his supporters attacked by police, Mondlane said the primary objective of the nationwide shutdown was successful. According to him, 95% of business activities were halted except for essential services. He urged his supporters to go home and wait for the announcement of the election results, which could come as early as Wednesday, and he thanked them for heeding the call to halt everything on Monday. My brothers, I have said this before and I will say it again. I say to you now, let's go home. I advise everyone to go home. Our goals today have been achieved. Today was the first stage. We just wanted to suspend work activity and manifest the repudiation for the assassination of Elvino Diaz. This objective was achieved and was done very well. The disputed election, along with the death of the two opposition figures over the weekend, have increased tensions, which are only expected to rise with the release of the election results later this week. Charles Manguiro, VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Human rights activists in Nigeria are condemning police tactics used to disperse protesters who had gathered to honor those killed during a 2020 demonstration against police brutality. Witnesses a police beat and fired tear gas at protesters on Sunday as they tried to gather at the Lekki toll gate in Lagos, the site of the killings 4 years ago. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigerian nurse Abiodun Thomas is reeling from the injuries inflicted on her leg and back by Nigerian police agents on Sunday. She was one of many activists holding a procession near the Lekki toll gate in Lagos to remember the fatal shooting of protesters at the site 4 years ago. She says police manhandled her, beat her, and arrested her along with 21 others.
As we were marching towards the toll gate, policemen approached us. We shot into the air. Then all of a sudden, we started firing canisters of tear gas. That was when we started running. And they gave us a very hot chill. I was apprehended. They started pouncing on me, beating me. They hit me with the bottom of their gun on my right leg 3 times. One of the police officers slapped me twice.
A police spokesperson said on X that they had released all the protesters in police custody without commenting on the conduct of the officers. On the night of October 20, 2020, soldiers killed at least 12 protesters at the toll gate, according to Amnesty International. The protesters were among thousands of Nigerian youths who had taken to the streets for 2 weeks to demand the disbandment of the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, SARS police unit. The protest, dubbed End SARS, was the most massive in Nigeria's recent history and soon expanded to call for better governance. The Lagos State Police Authority say the protesters on Sunday flouted an order banning protests in the area except with the knowledge of state authorities. But rights groups, including Amnesty International, are criticizing the police. Isa Sanusi is Amnesty International's head in Nigeria.
Saying that they need a permit from the police to stage a protest is just a bizarre and unlawful requirement. It's a renewed assault on human rights. It's a renewed assault on the rule of law.
Sanusi says police brutality remains a problem and that the government's more recent attempts to clamp down on free speech are only making matters worse.
Nothing has changed about the government's attitude towards peaceful protest by citizens. So we are really concerned. What we are witnessing is the emergence of a new pattern of clampdown on civic rights.
Unless something changes, the End SARS anniversary will remain a stark reminder of a struggle to end police brutality in Nigeria for good. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 22nd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema has dismissed 3 constitutional court judges at the recommendation of the country's Judicial Complaint Commission. The judges had been investigated for allegations of misconduct. The court has been hearing a petition about whether former President Edgar Lungu was eligible to contest the 2021 and then the 2026 presidential election. The court ruled in 2021 that Lungu was eligible to run for president, although he lost to then opposition leader Hichilema. Emmanuel Mwamba is the spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition Patriotic Front Party. He tells me that the judges should never be punished for their legal rulings.
This president has fired more judges than any other president at any time in the last 6 years of our life as a country. We have condemned his decision to undermine the judiciary with these dismissals. He has not bothered to respect the security of tenure that the judges enjoy. He started with the director of public prosecutions. She was also hounded out of office when that office enjoys security of Kenya. We have pleaded with the president to uphold the constitution and to respect the security of Kenya that these judges enjoy.
Supporters of the president, and according to him, the president was acting or he acted within the confines of the law, particularly based on the recommendation of the Judicial Complaints Commission, because according to him, these judges were biased in their previous rulings.
You cannot punish judges for their ruling, no matter how unfavorable it is. These judges ruled against the current president when he was in opposition. They ruled against his election petition in 2016. You cannot bring such a complaint that's almost 8 years old to the fore and then use it to punish the judges. A judge's mind cannot be questioned when they're doing their duties. There's nothing unethical about passing a judgment that you don't agree with. This is the case in this matter where the 3 judges were picked out of the 5. The other one issued the dissenting judge, who's the current president of the Constitutional Court. But they picked only these three that had issued a judgment against the president when he was in opposition. This is an abuse of the process.
These three judges, they played a role in the last election deciding on the eligibility of former President Edgar Lungu. Do you see this as an attempt by President Hichilema to deny President Lungu participation in the coming election?
Currently, there is a new case that again has been brought by surrogates of the ruling party. These surrogates have complained that the previous rulings by the Constitutional Court that enabled President Lungu to participate in elections, they are saying those judgments and rulings are illegal. So they've again surrogates that have brought these matters before the Constitutional Court, and they are attempting to overturn four previous judgments that ruled that Edgar Lungu was eligible to stand in 2021 or in this case 2026. Again, this is an abuse of the process where they want a favorable judgment. Only a favorable judgment to President Hakainde Hichilema is a valid judgment in their view.
Emmanuel Mwamba is the spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition, Patriotic Front Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. In Zimbabwe, some former commercial farmers who were kicked off their land over 20 years ago say a government offer of compensation is woefully inadequate and only desperate people will take the offer. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Mututi Ncube, Zimbabwe's finance minister, says the government is starting to compensate white commercial farmers whose land was taken during the regime of long-time President Robert Mugabe. Ncube said $20 million would be shared by 94 foreign investors whose farms were seized in what Mugabe described as land reforms. The government has promised to fork out another $3.5 billion to white Zimbabwean farmers.
So both payments will start in earnest, and this is a multi-year program. It's not just for 1 year. So every year we have an allocation and make those payments that we fulfill the constitutional requirements.
In the early 2000s, black farmers displaced about 4,000 former white commercial farmers with the government's blessing, which said the takeovers were meant to correct colonial-era imbalances. In 2013, Zimbabwe enacted a constitution calling for the government to pay the displaced farmers for land improvements. Farmers and the government reached a deal 4 years ago, settling the amount of compensation at $3.5 billion. Zimbabwe Farmers Union Secretary General Paul Zakaria says the government should make that promise a reality.
Now, the critical factor remains that is the money available? And if it is not available, what is being done to ensure that we follow through on the provision of the Constitution as well as the provisions of the Global Compensation Agreement?
Kudzai Mutisi, an independent but pro-government commentator, says the government's decision to compensate the former commercial farmers is wrong.
There is no justification whatsoever for compensating the former white commercial farmers because for decades they made huge amounts of money from that land. And that land, they acquired it through colonization. They never bought the land. It is something that they acquired through use of brutal force. But here we are having a black government trying to compensate the abuser. It's irrational, it's bizarre, and it should be stopped immediately.
The government says compensating the farmers may help improve relations with Western nations who imposed sanctions on Zimbabwe, in part because the farmers' land was confiscated. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
Many European Union countries are calling for the bloc to clamp down on migration amid a surge in support for right-wing political parties. But Spain is bucking the trend and insists that Europe's aging population needs controlled migration to boost its economy. Henry Ridgewell reports.
More than 42,000 irregular migrants have arrived in Spain so far this year, a two-thirds increase from 2023. Most arrive on Spain's Canary Islands, more than 100 kilometres from the African coastline. Last year alone, around 6,000 migrants died attempting the crossing, according to human rights groups. But for many, the dangers are outweighed by the dream of a new life in Europe. 22-year-old Masire Konare arrived in Spain from Mali.
If you make it here, the only thing you have to do is go to class, to keep learning, to talk to people. You have to be an open person, especially as an immigrant. You have to make a double effort, and that's what we're doing now.
For the migrants, there is hope of a better life. The Spanish government also sees economic potential. Like many Western countries, Spain's population is aging fast. It desperately needs young workers to build the economy and pay taxes. But the country's birth rate last year hit its lowest level ever recorded at under 1.2, among the lowest in Europe. Speaking at a European Union leaders' summit Thursday, Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said immigration is vital.
Our present and future competitiveness, the economic growth of our country, the sustainability of our welfare model also depends on migration. We must manage migration flows from the perspective of a demographic challenge.
But amid a rise in support for far-right parties across Europe, many EU member states want tougher migration controls. Striking a balance won't be easy. Jesus Verdu Baeza is an associate professor of law at the University of Cadiz.
We are a country with strong values, and we want this balance between controlling migration and offering asylum seekers a legal way to enter and to respect their rights. We need them. Here in Spain, without migrants, we have no fruits on the supermarkets. Possibly the economy simply could not function properly. We need migrants.
As part of its new approach, Spain is drafting a strategy for Africa, focusing on what it describes as the economic and social transformation of the continent. While seeking to facilitate legal migration, Spain is trying to stop irregular migrants arriving on its shores. It wants the EU's border agency Frontex to seek permission to patrol African coastlines to intercept the migrant boats. Many migrants are traumatized by the journey. 21-year-old Ahmed Karab is from Morocco.
I want to give some advice to my countrymen and my friends. Don't come in a small boat because they are very dangerous.
Spain wants a long-term solution to migration that works for Africa and for Europe. But the hope of a better life continues to draw tens of thousands of people across these dangerous seas. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
A Ugandan military tribunal on Monday convicted 16 members of an opposition party of illegal possession of explosive devices and treachery, according to a defense lawyer who said the proceedings were suspect. The prosecution alleged that the 16 members of the National Unity Platform, as well as others still on the run, were found in possession of explosives between November 2020 and May 2021 while elections were underway. Former singer and opposition figure Bobby Wine, whose real name is Robert Chakulai, claimed the group had been forced to plead guilty and seek a presidential pardon. And that's it for this Tuesday, October 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.